docket is Sutter versus Commonwealth. Ms. Milligan?
Yes, Your Honor.
You have 15 minutes. Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, 3 minutes, please.
Okay, 3 minutes it is. Begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Alicia Milligan, and I represent the appellant in this case, Geralyn A. Marie Sutter. So Ms. Sutter was convicted in the trial court for the malicious killing of a pig, which is a felony, and cruelty to an animal, which was a misdemeanor. This case is unique on many, many levels, but most significantly, the case is unique because the intentional killing of the animal, the pig in this case, was not actually the crime. So while the malicious wounding or killing of a person is obviously a very different scenario from what this court is considering today, even in the context of animals, as far as I know, no court has ever considered whether the botched slaughter of an abandoned pig might be found to be intentionally malicious or cruel. This animal suffered, and it's hard to ignore that fact. But in terms of criminal liability, it's not the suffering of the pig that's relevant, but the intent of the appellant. And that is where I think the court needs to direct its focus. Clearly, there was an intent to kill the pig. But the question is, was there an intent to be cruel to the pig? Was there an intent for it to suffer unduly? And that's where I think the court did not take that into account in addressing the sufficiency of the evidence or the jury instructions. And that's where the focus of the argument is. There were 6 assignments of error that were granted. And I don't know how the time's going to go, so I'd like to start. I may jump around a little bit, and I'm going to start with assignment of error number 2. And that was the court's granting of the instruction number 11, which said that the jury may infer malice from the deliberate use of a deadly weapon unless, from all the evidence, you have a reasonable doubt as to whether malice existed. Although this instruction may be a correct statement of the law generally, it's our position that it was not appropriate in the context of the charged offense and the facts of this case. There was no basis in the evidence of this particular case to instruct the jury that they could infer malice from the use of a deadly weapon. To the contrary, the use of that knife to kill the pig had no bearing on whether the intent of the appellant, whether there was malice or not, or what her intent was.
Can I ask you on that? I hate to interrupt you,
no,
but time goes by fast here.
Yes.
The fact that we have in the record evidence of at least 31 stab wounds, and the fact that maybe this you may argue goes the other way, but then the near decapitation of the pig. And the fact that the pig was supposed to be taken home by appellant and her boyfriend, but instead was killed right there at the entrance to the SPCA, why can't a fact finder look at all that and indicate that there's malice?
So that goes to the sufficiency of the argument as to whether malice existed. So I can just jump to that to answer your question on that point.
And can't you add into that that an undersized knife was used to do the job?
That, again, that's another factor. Again, it again goes to not
whether... I just wanted to lump that in for purposes of Judge Beal's question.
So the fact that there were 31 stab wounds, first of all, Your Honor, that was undisputed evidence. I'm not going to dispute the fact that the person who did the necropsy report found that there were 31 stab wounds. If you look at the actual report, the necropsy report with the pictures, you'll see that it shows clearly that all of the wounds were around the neck. All of them were in the pig's neck. There were different parts, the front, the back, as they described when they first started. The idea was to slit the pig's throat. One slit to the throat that would kill the pig, and that was the intent. But it didn't work. Mr. Oakes had never killed a pig, had no idea how thick there's muscle and there's fat, and it was a very difficult thing to do. So it simply didn't work. All of those, the necropsy report also points out that the majority of those wounds were all the same size, less than 2.5 centimeters, which is less than an inch. So they were small wounds, someone trying, which is entirely consistent with what he was trying to do, which was to slaughter the pig. And Your Honor also mentioned the pig was nearly decapitated. The evidence actually didn't show that fact. There was the appellee cited in her brief a statement that said one of the wounds on the back of the neck was a very large gaping wound, like an attempt to decapitate the pig. That was on page 41 of the appendix. That was a statement by the animal control officer, Larry Krickenberg. It was an observation.
But isn't light most favorable to the Commonwealth? Isn't that a reasonable inference to draw from that statement?
That he said there was a large gaping wound like an attempt to decapitate the pig. But it's not a statement from the coroner that the head was nearly decapitated. It was simply a statement made by the animal control officer. There was a large gaping wound to the neck, which, again, is consistent with, you know, when one says there were 31 stab wounds, you picture someone just randomly stabbing all over a pig. That was not the case. This was a pig that was thrashing wildly, that was incredibly angry, that was thrashing its head, that was biting, that was squirming, that was trying to get away. So, and the question then becomes, the pig, so the intent was to kill the pig. So where do you find the malice? The first cut didn't work.
Well, I guess, can I interrupt you again there?
Yes.
Because it's not like, you know, they've taken the pig to the farm and they've got a smokehouse there. We're going to have a ham or some bacon or sausage,
right,
or something. This is a situation where shortly before they've had the pig on a harness and they're walking the pig back and forth like you'd walk a pet or a dog. And then the next thing you know, the pig is getting a little irritated and he bites because he can't, I guess, get the harness on him right the second time they're going to walk him or take him somewhere. And he bites through Mr. Oakes's boot or shoe and bites his foot. And all of a sudden, everything changes. He's going to get that knife, and he does it very quickly. And then the multiple stabbings right there in front of the SPCA. It's not on a farm near. Help me understand,
yes,
why all of a sudden malice wasn't involved here,
okay,
given that,
yes, yes,
factual scenario.
Yes. So I think that is the factual scenario that the Commonwealth tried to paint at trial. The actual evidence at trial was that the pig came in the crate. During the day, they tried to take care of it as best they could, and this pig had been running amok for days and was chased and was finally caught, was exhausted, frothing at the mouth. So yes, he initially took it out on the harness, but at some point, the pig escaped from the harness. And that's when he had to tackle it so that it wouldn't escape, so that it wouldn't run away. And that's where sometime shortly thereafter, when my client, Ms. Sutter, came out and tried to help him restrain the pig, tie up the pig. That was their goal. They wanted to tie up the pig. Their goal all along was to take it to the butcher. They'd already contacted the butcher. They were going to tie it up to get into the car to take it to a butcher. It was always the intent, was a neighborhood barbecue. So the Commonwealth said at some point the pig bit through Mr. Oakes's boot. There's no indication that it bit through the boot and all of a sudden his demeanor changed. My client testified his demeanor never changed. They struggled with this pig. Ms. Sutter testified for an hour or more they struggled to tie it up. And they just couldn't. They finally got to the point where they could not tie up the pig. They couldn't. She felt that there was no way they'd get it back into a crate, which was back inside the SPCA. There was no way they could get it into a car. It was
so. Call the police again.
So In retrospect, there's a lot of things they should have done.
Well, the statement yes. I see in your brief, that they had no choice but to kill the pig. And I'm trying to get from how you
right.
go from C to Z on they had no choice but to kill the pig.
I understand, Your Honor. And
they wanted to kill the pig because they wanted to get it to the butcher. But
well,
at what point
they felt
at what point did they have no choice but to kill the pig?
Well, they felt that for their own safety and for the safety of the community, which the SPCA is near a residential neighborhood and elementary school, that if the pig got loose, that wasn't a good scenario.
So it was a conscious decision made to protect themselves and the community by killing this pig?
So I think...
And is that supported by the record?
In the heat of... Yes, that's what Ms. Sutter testified to. She did testify.
Well, but you've got to look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth at
yes.
this juncture, not in the light most favorable to the defendant. And at trial, it's perfectly acceptable to make those arguments. But here on appeal, the evidence is viewed in light most favorable to the prevailing party below, which in this case is the Commonwealth.
Yes,
so you have
that's
to discount
correct,
all of the evidence that goes the other direction.
So, yes, you have to look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth. But, again, their only evidence is the 31 stab wounds, which, again, I don't think support a finding of malice. They were trying to kill the pig. So how does the number of stab wounds indicate?
Well, in the criminal context, the number of stab wounds in a murder is very relevant towards showing malice.
And when, you realize that the knife you have is not sufficient to do the job and you don't know what you're doing and you're simply inflicting torturous harm,
but
at what point do you abandon that attempt?
That's a good question, but would abandoning the attempt have been more cruel? That's the issue,
Maybe
Your
not
Honor.
After one or two of these small stab wounds that are only a couple centimeters.
But that's a difficult question. I think, I think once you start, most people would say they started to kill the pig, they had to finish the job, it would be cruel not to. As when you wound an animal when you're hunting, you want to put it out of its misery. I think it's, in retrospect, as we said, it's very easy, but there's and again, I'm going to run out of time, but to go back to the jury instructions, I think that there were also... there were errors made in how the jury was instructed with regard to what constitutes malice. But in this case, with regard to the sufficiency of the evidence, again, the facts, the argument would be that facts don't rise to a level where a rational fact finder could actually find that there was evil in their heart, that they had an evil motive. Because killing the pig, like killing a person, is just evil to begin with. There's no getting around it. But killing the animal was what they intended to do in the first place. They were going to take it to a butcher. It was going to be butchered either way. So that wasn't the issue. It was terrible that it ended up happening right outside the SPCA. That wasn't their intent. But once they decided, or he decided, that there was, he couldn't do anything. They couldn't get it home. They couldn't put it back inside. They didn't want to let it escape.
And I understand the argument. It was Mr. Oakes made the decision to do it. But then, doesn't the record still show that she helps hold the pig while he keeps doing this over quite a bit of time?
She did. She tried to hold the pig still so that he could do it. Mm-hmm. And again, to try and, once it was begun, it would have been cruel to stop and just watch the pig suffer and do nothing. So that's where it becomes a difficult question. Slaughtering an animal, things can go wrong. When anyone slaughters an animal. So if it had been done at a farm, then would it suddenly have not been malicious because it happened at their farm? I mean, it doesn't change what happened, where it happened. It sounds bad, it looks bad, it was bad, but it doesn't change what was the motive, and was it truly an evil person to cause that pig to suffer
usually
harm?
Usually on a farm, someone is killing their own animal, and that's another issue here as to the fact that this animal was presented to, I forget his name off the top of my head now, but to the gentleman who bought the other pig and then got this one almost as a freebie.
Right.
Or the SPCA then had the animal as opposed to
right.
your
but
client.
At that time, and she wasn't convicted of the larceny. She believed it had been given to her, and it was now her pig. Well, there was also tests, I mean, it was an abandoned pig. But it was going to be, again, that's not the issue. The issue is, was it malicious? Was it cruel? Did they intend to be cruel? Was it their purpose to torture the pig or simply to kill the pig? And unless it was to torture the pig, then I think the evidence is insufficient.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Tyson, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'd like to start with the sufficiency of the evidence issue. And the question before the court is, could a rational fact finder have concluded that this was a malicious stabbing of a swine and cruelty to an animal? And the answer is clearly yes. The fact finder in this case rejected the hypothesis of innocence that the defendant proposed. And the defendant proposed to this jury that this was merely an inept butchering gone bad. And the jury heard that argument, they evaluated the evidence, and they rejected it. And so the answer to the question is, could a rational fact finder have found that this was malicious? Is yes, a rational fact finder could, and this jury did. And we look at this evidence and say, is this plainly wrong? Is this without evidence to support it? And the answer to that question is no. I want to add a few other facts to the ones that have already been discussed. We already noted that there were 31 stab wounds that were noted by one of the veterinarians. The testimony was that the head was nearly severed, and as pointed out by counsel, I think that it said it looked like there was an attempt. On page 458 of the appendix is a photograph, probably of the gaping hole that's described, or the gaping wound. It's not great and black and white in the appendix, but I know the photograph is in the record and would be available for the court to look at. There was testimony on page 192 of the appendix that it took about 10 minutes for this pig to die. And even the defendant in her own testimony at 310 of the appendix noted that the pig suffered. Additionally, if the court will recall, when the animal control officer came looking for the pig on the day after it was killed, the defendant and the co-defendant were not up front to say, oh, well, actually, you know, the pig is dead now, or that we killed the pig. Eventually, the animal control officer learned this, but that was hidden from the animal control officer by the defendant and her co-defendant when first the investigation began. And so that's another factor in support of finding that this was cruelty to the animal and also that it was a malicious killing of another swine. When the court discards the evidence that's inconsistent with the Commonwealth's evidence, as is necessary on appeal, and considers the evidence that was considered by the fact finder, then the result is that a rational fact finder could make the decision that this rational fact finder made, and that was that this was a malicious killing of another's animal. And so if we go back and look at the jury instructions, and I think, you know, one of the major arguments that the defense makes in this case is that when you have an animal that can actually be killed, unlike a person, then we have to have a different definition of malice. And the Commonwealth would disagree with that theory. And the reason that I say that is because the wording that the General Assembly chose to put in 18.2-144 almost exactly mirrors the words that are in the malicious wounding statute in 18.2-51. The statutes speak of maliciously shooting, stabbing, wounding, and with the intent to maim, disfigure, disable, or kill. Well, if in fact the General Assembly had intended for a different mens rea to be involved, a different kind of malice, the General Assembly intended that malice had to be different because an animal was involved, then they would not have used these same words that they used in the malicious wounding statute. And I think that it's a testament to that, that in 18.2-144, the malicious killing of an animal, they have some very specific language. For instance, it must be the animal of another unless you're defrauding the insurance. So the General Assembly is very capable of putting things in a statute to where there's a unique situation. And so they did put something in the statute about that, but left maliciously shoot, stab, with the intent to kill, maim, or disfigure. This court, very recently in Hughley, address this issue of an instruction on malice, and was it necessary to have more than is in the model jury instruction in order to adequately define the term malice. And this court ruled that the instruction that essentially was given in this case had been approved in Thomas. It was an adequate instruction. It adequately covered the issue of the definition of malice. And so in this case, it is sufficient. It adequately covered the issue. And I think it's important when you look at the instruction itself, which is instruction 10, which is on page 14 of the appendix, it's important to note that this instruction says that malice is the state of mind which results in the intentional doing of a wrongful act without legal excuse or justification at a time when the mind is under control. Malice may result from an unlawful or unjustified motive, including anger, hatred, or revenge. The reason I think that's important is when we remember that the defense in this case was there was no malice, but this was merely an inept attempt at butchering, that this instruction, under this instruction, had the jury accepted that, they would have had to acquit. This adequately defined what malice was. And I would note that the cases, the big case that was relied on by the defense in the brief that was filed, in the appellant's brief, was quite different than the facts that we have here. As you may recall, that involved a single shot to another's animal. And I also just want to underscore that the fact that the jury asked a question about malice in this case is not something that this court looks at. I believe it was in the Kinnamore case where the court said a question from a jury can simply be the tentative view of a single juror. So based upon the fact that the jury received an adequate instruction with regard to malice, and they heard the summation of the defense, which was that this was not a malicious killing, that it was a mistake, mistakes were made, the jury had all of that, and the jury was able to make its decision, and it could have acquitted under this instruction, but found the evidence was sufficient. With regard to instruction 11, about which the appellant argued in her opening, the instruction is a permissive inference. In fact, it's one that it's more than just you may infer, because the instruction goes on to say you may infer unless you find from all of the evidence that malice existed. And so if you find from the other evidence that malice existed, you may not infer from the use of a deadly weapon. And so the jury was not required to make this inference. The jury simply had that as a permissive inference and could have determined whether there was malice or not, which brings us back to the initial instruction, instruction 10, that defined malice and adequately defined malice for the jury. And there are a couple of other issues that were raised in the brief. They were not addressed by the appellant in opening, but I don't want to sit down if this court has any questions about those other issues.
Can I ask you about assignment of error 5?
Yes, sir.
The fact that the court did not allow her to testify about what the police said to her, that they didn't really, she proffered that the police said to her, "We don't really care what you do with the animal." I mean, why is that hearsay? Because it's not really being offered for the truth of the matter. Is it that the police really didn't care? She's really offering it, isn't she, to say, "Well, I then did X because the police said that." Not that the police cared or didn't care, really.
But I think there's two places to look here. And as the court may recall, actually another witness before the defendant, a witness who testified for the Commonwealth, Ms. Earhart, testified a little bit about this. And initially, when the question was asked of Ms. Earhart, the objection came from the Commonwealth, and the defense said, "Well, this is not being offered for the truth." And the court said, "Well, but it doesn't have any effect unless you can rely on it for the truth." In other words, if the officer didn't have the authority to tell her that she could, he didn't care what she did with it, then it's essentially not relevant. I don't think the court used those words. But that's, to me, the plain meaning of what the court said. Either it's hearsay because you've offered it for the truth of the matter, or it doesn't matter. It doesn't count because the fact that someone said that would not be relevant. In other words, an officer...
They didn't have the authority to...
Correct. An officer couldn't say... I think the example I used in my brief was if an officer stops you for speeding and then says, yeah, I really don't care how fast you go. You know, go as fast as you want now. That's not a defense. And the fact that even if an officer said, I don't care what you do with it, would not be a defense to the malicious stabbing. I think also, Your Honor, that should the court find that there is error here, this is harmless error, given a number of things. First of all, I really think the focus of that statement from the police went to the larceny, which of course is not before the court now, whether she had permission to take that pig. But also the fact that this other witness, Ms. Earhart, testified that the officers, basically once it was out of their hands, it was the SPCA's problem. They were glad to be done with the pig. That evidence was before the jury. So whether they cared about it or not, or whether they actually said they didn't care about it, everyone also testified that they knew the defendant was going to take this pig away from the SPCA.
Does it affect the malice at all in any way? Because it doesn't actually deal with the animal of another, does it?
I'm sorry, it doesn't deal with the animal of another?
Well, the killing of an animal of another, that part of the... statute.
I mean,
it's not just because the pig said we don't care what you do with it doesn't mean that the police are saying you are now the owner of this animal.
Right.
Therefore, it's not someone else's.
Oh, I see. And her testimony in the proffer was that she thought that it belonged to her. But no, I don't think so, because even the police saying I don't care, even if the police said I don't care what you do with it. Would not give her the right to own it over Mr. Zamora, who actually got the pig as a part of a deal with the other pig that he was buying. So again, I think that the judge did not err in this case, because there was this tension between if it wasn't offered for the truth, it really doesn't have any value, and if it was offered for the truth, then it's hearsay. But even if there is error in this case, I think that it is harmless given all of the other evidence that was before the jury, and especially the testimony of this other witness who testified before the defendant did. And so if there are no additional questions, we would urge this court to affirm the judgment.
Counsel, I think you burned up most of your rebuttal time. We'll give you 1 minute.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
It count.
Just briefly to address the hearsay question, I do think that it was clearly not offered for the truth, and it was error for that testimony not to be admitted. And I think that the question of whether it was harmless error is a little bit more difficult, but I think it clearly, in the context of this whole case, where her state of mind and whether she acted with malice is the crux of the case, that it was not harmless error, because the context into which she believed the officers, she said, well, I can't take the pig. We don't house them here. And they're standing there saying, well, you're taking this pig. And she said, well, I can call my boyfriend, see if he'll be willing to take it home. And they said, we don't care what you did with the pig. So I think to not allow that testimony in the context of the entire case, it was relevant. To her state of mind and to whether she acted with malice. So I guess I will leave it at that, because I'm going to run out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll come down and greet counsel.